Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, an exciting show. I've been talking with Brian Hurt for the last couple minutes before the show, but Brian, our guest today, is the vice president of Strauss Friedberg, an Aon company, but was the former Intel director for Microsoft Digital Crimes and the founder of NCIS program for the U.S. Navy, the cyber program. So a very strong background, and we all watch that NCIS on TV, right? So tell us, is it like what we see on TV?
So, I love this question because two or three of my friends from back in the old days are advisors on the show. So a couple of this, I don't watch much of it, but I have watched a couple episodes and it's kind of fun. And one of them sounded really familiar. So I called my friend as the advisor and I asked him, I said, that sounds familiar. Am I going to get royalties for that? And he says, no, but I will. And so what I can say about the show is we weren't that cute. We probably weren't that thin. And we can't solve crime in 38 minutes minus commercials. But I am impressed with the effort that the advisors put in to try and make it as real as Hollywood will let you and still be exciting.
Interesting. So can't solve a crime in 38 minutes. What percentage of them went unsolved?
This is interesting. In my time at NCIS, I went in straight after graduating from the Naval Academy and worked in the criminal division, then helped found the cyber counterintelligence program for the U.S. Navy. I would say in our criminal cases, the solve rate was remarkably good because of the ability of NCIS to work both as a law enforcement agency inside and outside the boundaries of the ships or bases and our partnership with FBI and local law enforcement. Counter-espionage and our fraud division just did rock star stuff too, because those cases all have that base in reality and that base in evidence and local. The espionage cases are always, a much more nebulous thing, but I can tell you, we founded the program in 1993 before the web existed. For those of your listeners who are a little younger, the web didn't exist in 1993. There was no Googling through your job. We had a better hit rate than some of the three-letter agencies. And I still think to this day, the program, I get to talk to them once a year and ask the question, still seems to be going quite well, I'm told. So I think for NCIS and our brothers and sisters in AFOSI and the Air Force Office of Special Investigations and Army CID, I think they have a better hit rate than most and a better follow-through rate because they're protecting the mission, and the mission is to protect everyone. So I think we have pretty good record there.
And they're able to act pretty quick. I remember having NCIS people come on the ship when we were in foreign ports and something happened, Liberty incident with somebody. Never involved me. We'll put that right out there. But they were there in the middle of the night, hours after it happened, and satellite boxes and all kinds of things going down. It was like, wow, this is quick and tidy.
And that's, it's interesting. And one of the things I found in my career is you kind of come full circle in some regards. And I work at Strauss Friedberg in the, it basically Aon Cyber Solutions, but we are a unit made up of a lot of retired law enforcement officers and what I call cyber smoke jumpers. And we have offices from Hong Kong to London. Same thing. Somebody calls us in the middle of the night, you grab your go bag like you're on a SEAL team, and you drop into the middle of that cyber fire like you're a firefighter off the back of a plane. And we're able to respond and do some amazing things to help people. And it feels oddly familiar. But mm-hmm. for those of you earlier in your career, there's nothing like working direct for the Navy or mother government, regardless of regime. I'm talking about just pure patriotic service to the government. Being a part of that mission and that family is something that sticks with you forever. Navy, Marine Corps, Army, even the Air Force, all the same.
Definitely. As soon as we started talking, as soon as your picture came up with the wall of Navy on the back, and we started going right into old times. But let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back in a minute.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Brian Hurd, as we were talking, the former founder of NCIS Cyber Division. Cyber crimes, is it?
Yeah.
Yep.
And it was the cyber counter-espionage program.
Counter-espionage. And we were kind of reminiscing a little bit about Navy, as I, former Navy as well. And getting into, you know, kind of the meat of what we want to talk about today and is, you know, what, you know, we like to think about that we always hear dumb down cyber, right? Make it so we can talk to the executives. But you had a different thought on that. That's cybersecurity. We need to level up and get the people who are leading to understand some of the technicals. So tell us about your experience and why you come to that point of view.
Absolutely. And thanks for the opportunity to explore this concept, because I found that over the last 30 years running these types of investigations, that there is this attempt a lot of times by technical staff to either try and teach boards of executives or secretaries of the Navy how firewalls work or other things a admiral or a general doesn't need to know to pursue an engagement, or a CEO doesn't need to know to run a crisis. And if they say, well, I got to dumb it down for the board or dumb it down for the general. No, we have to level it up. We have to talk in the business terms, the enterprise risk terms, the national security terms, the diplomacy terms. And as cyber leaders or crisis leaders, or both in my case, it is translating the extreme technical components in a way that lets a leader lead, that lets a CFO make CFO decisions, that lets a CEO determine the course of action for a company that just suffered a massive cyber breach or a horrible physical accident that affected its teams or is facing any type of crisis. It's interesting. In a hurricane, you don't talk to the chief about how a hurricane works to talk to them about how to respond to one. Yet for some reason in cyber, we feel this desire or zeal to try and teach them the inner workings of a hurricane, which are important to the cyber staff, but not always important to the leaders to make financial and safety and risk decisions.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think this was in the Navy hearing about this, that said, if you can't break down a decision, the three decision points, that's what you present to your leadership. Here's the three things I need to tell you to make that decision.
Absolutely. And those are the things that I think in, especially in the cyber arena, there are nuances. I've worked cases where, in fact, last year I had to put a team of 30 individuals to help one client. Overnight, we had to stand up war rooms or cyber crisis rooms in both Israel and California and go 24/7, handing off every 12 between them in a follow the sun thing. But then I had to take the work of those 30 people plus 200 of the client staff and level it up, so that the board of directors and the board of advisors above them could all understand it. Those were much smarter people than me, I had to level up my game to boil and or distill for us Navy men. You got to distill it down to the three things or four things that board needs to know to make a decision that guides 250 firefighters.
Give us an example if something you can that's not classified or sensitive. Yeah.
I've been honored to lead some of the nation's largest cases, including I led U.S. watch listing for the response to the Boston Marathon attack. I was not the FBI led the investigation. I led the response for all of U.S. watch listing. One of the things about that was once we alerted it, I was asked one question by my boss: is the case management system you designed ready to brief a president from? I said, yes, it's tested. We're ready to go. That's all they needed to know. I didn't need to explain to them all the functions, all the things I had done, all the tests we had run. And then when you turn around and I was not the briefer to the president, somebody else got that, and that's fine with me. We had to distill what we were doing, why and where, for a very complex and fast-breaking operation into the things and decisions we needed at the levels seven echelons above us. And it's the same. You and I were sharing a story about you had a casualty in the engine room you ran at sea. The CO of that boat, the commander of that ship, I'm sure didn't need to understand all the amazing things you did. Is his crew safe? Can you get us back to port? And how long is it going to take you to fix it? Those are the three things a leader needs to know. Anything else, and you're potentially wasting the leader's time. And what I'll tell you for the executives that are listeners of yours, if you're ever in a boardroom, and some cyber guy is going off on how a firewall is configured, use the following statement: if you can't level this up and talk enterprise risk, I'm going to have to hire somebody who can. You own your boardroom again. Don't let somebody tell you how a watch is made.
How the sausage is made, right?
Exactly. And I've seen CFOs and CEOs, I do a lot of advisory around the world, mm-hmm. get a lot taller and wait for the next meeting because they're going to roll that sentence out on the cyber guy. The other honor I have still based on some old friends is twice a year I fly over, when humans flew, I fly over to Germany to brief at the George C. Marshall Center to 100 representatives of about 80 different nations on fighting international organized cybercrime. Mm-hmm. I'm not there to talk to them about the most recent virus or ransomware, but I am there to talk to them about the international trends in organized crime and the fact that these things are hitting all of us. So whether I'm speaking to a dais of parliamentary members and chiefs of police and other things, or I'm speaking to the board of a Fortune 500 company about some of the worst days they're having as executives, I've never dumbed it down. I have to level up my game. I have to be on their playing field. Mm-hmm. And if you think you're dumbing it down, they'll feel it, they'll hear it, and you won't be back.
And they'll tune out. They'll see that look in the eyes. Yeah.
They'll find another person that can do what they need done and not make them feel stupid. And they're not stupid. They're just smarter in other areas than us. Way smarter.
Getting into the details. I was thinking of, it came across my mind and went away. You know how that happens. And as I get older, it seems to happen more and more. I just lost it. Where were we at on that one?
No, I understood. And I understand, like, we've been talking about, like, some of the cyber threats facing a lot of the corporations today. And this weekend, I had five different phone calls and five different companies in different states of having an insider threat or having a ransomware attack or other things. It's that ability in crisis management you and I learned in the Navy and many others of your listeners have learned in their professions is to quickly assess what's the most important things in a situation, deploy the right team at the right time and the right amount of firepower to get it done, mm-hmm. and then come back and brief the board by distilling it down like you were talking about.
Yeah.
And I've seen in your work with ASU and others to take very complex technologies and put them in the hands of the next generation of engineers or cyber security personnel, you've had to do that too. And you and I and the people in our field, it is our job to make it more accessible by leveling it up and make it more accessible by mentoring that next generation.
Yeah. Well, I remembered what I was going to talk about, but we're going to take a break and I'm going to come back after we hear from our sponsors and I'm going to tell you about a pattern I see and see if you associate with that type of thing. Be right back.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
So welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, talking to Brian Hurd. Before the break, we were talking about leveling up to the board, to your decision makers, speaking the language that the people making decisions need to hear. And I have seen in my career over and over and over again that so many people in cybersecurity and industry in general, like you said, when you went to your event in Germany. You don't want to hear about all the latest attacks, all the latest cyber crimes, the criminals. We get so bogged down in gathering all the information, all the details. Tell me about all the hacks. I'm going to circulate on my feed every day. This was hacked. This was hacked. This happened. This problem. That we enter into what I can only have referred to as a simulative paradox, where we're not going to do anything till we assimilate all the information. And the information is growing and coming at us faster every day, so we just never act. And it seems like that's the paradigm we get when, the board wants to make a decision. They have to, the people in charge, and we're just inundating them with all the details and information so that they have all the information to make the right decision, but that's not what's needed. We need to get out of that assimilative paradox.
Agreed, and wholeheartedly, and I'll reply back with a couple of the things that I've seen over the last 30 years is a couple of things people think in a crisis and a couple of things that are absolutely wrong. And analysis paralysis in the assimilative paradox is another concept I'm sure you've heard.
I've heard that too, yes.
You have so much information, you're trying to find the perfect information. So one of the statistics I heard, and I'll have to caveat this because I have to go find if this is true and where I heard it. But in my elderly mind, as I led programs for 30 years, I was reminded that when you see a Harvard Business Review study of some incident or business decision, it's all laid out, it's all logical. I've actually interviewed some of those executives when I'm doing board advisory or if I happen to be working with them on a breach. Or actually, we do positive stuff too. I'm not always the firefighter, but like hundreds of things I do on advisory and avoiding things, but a lot of times the cooler stories are when something went wrong. Is I asked them about those events that I've read a Harvard Business Review study on. I'm talking to a Fortune 50 executive. And they're like, yeah, we had 1/10 of that information when we made the decision. So what you think you're going to have when you're really an executive looking at a multi-billion dollar crisis or a nationwide terrorist attack, you won't have but 1/10 of what you think you have, even if you've read all the books. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing you have to be comfortable with, making decisions based on sparse information and then assessing and questioning, does this new information need to change my decision? And as you've said, there's another thing that people say, you can never over communicate in a crisis. That is exactly the worst thing you can do in a crisis. Over communication in a crisis clouds up the phone lines and the radio lines and the walkie talkie lines and the minds of the executives that need to lead you out of crisis. Mm-hmm. It clogs up right now in your every human listening now. Their email inbox is clogged with COVID-related communications that aren't needed. Now, there are some that are, and this is a global pandemic. But you can't communicate in a crisis.
But you can't find the ones that are relevant because you have 2,000 unread.
Exactly. That is the problem in a crisis. And one of the things I'll say for cyber leaders and the other listeners that flock to your group, you absolutely can over-communicate in a crisis, especially to a board who has, by the way, other briefers besides you. And if the communication channel is crowded, make a new one. Make a crisis set of emails in a special protected area and use that so they know which app to go to for the crisis, and then they can fight their inbox later.
Yeah. You know, I think that was something that both of us, the Navy did pretty well, is the communications and the command and control direct structure through a crisis, which crisis was normal operating procedure.
We lived in crisis every day. Therefore, this is unfortunately familiar. And there are certain truisms, even, and I've seen it at some of the commercial companies that do crisis management or face crisis on a regular basis. They're very regimented about the agenda, the follow through, leveling it up, like we've said, distilling those facts, like you indicated. You get three things. Oh, and the other thing I want to remind you, when we were taught in the Navy, they tell you only give after you've given those three facts and you ask for a decision. There are only three decisions that you ask a flag officer for. You either say do nothing, nuclear war, or here's the option we're going to force you to pick because the other two are really stupid. Now, I've adjusted that. There's four options. Do nothing, do everything, or nuclear war. The option we want you to pick, and then an option so remarkably stupid that you will drive us to option three thinking it was your idea. So there's a couple ways to play your briefing strategy as a senior crisis manager or cyber crisis manager, but teaching them about the technology is not one of those options.
Mm-hmm. So doing crisis management, now that's what you do with Straus Friedberg? You still do crisis management?
Straus Friedberg is one of the world's preeminent crisis management firms, and I can only mention the following because the clients have authorized us to. When Facebook was faced with the Cambridge Analytica scandal and needed a reputable investigator for forensics, they called us. When Mr. Zuckerberg needed the diagnostics of emails and Word documents from a college roommate claiming his company was not his, they called us. We have been hired by the U.S. government to oversee banks in the wake of the 2008 scandals. We've been called on every breach you've ever seen, quietly by the lawyers, to work on them. The one only thing my company's not good at is marketing, because we quietly go in and do what needs to be done. In fact, one salient example is the court appointed us to not only keep Bernie Madoff alive during his time on trial, but to keep the cyber jail around his house in place too. So from one person all the way up to Cambridge Analytica and the millions of apps, we're the company that you call for that.
Okay. So, does that take a certain mindset of person? Do you mostly stick with people that come out of the military that grew up doing crisis management and learned that in the environment? Do you take people out of college that just want to, they're interested in it? What's it take to get into that?
You know, there are multiple paths to get there. There are law enforcement officers or military personnel who've learned their skills. Some of the great teammates I get to work with at Straus Friedberg or Aon, our parent company, are just amazing. And they come from the most diverse backgrounds. Some of our penetration testers, we have groups that not only penetration test systems, but IoT, whole cities, aircraft, yachts, autonomous vehicles. They come from a commercial background or a educational background. And the one thing, the one little bit, and you and I were talking about this in our time and how you talked about your leadership, you seek out diversity, not only of their education, but their mindsets to build that team that does not have groupthink, that brings new opinions to a crisis. Because that is absolutely the strength of that team. So when I'm looking at a team, I try and look, what do I have a bunch of? And then I try and find something remarkably different.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had somebody, or I won't even say somebody, we'll say a instance or something where people just didn't fit? And it's like, all right, this type of, this action, this personality, maybe not so good.
Yes, many times in my career, I've seen a mismatch. And the one of the things about not only as a leader picking your team, but as an individual picking your path, just because you don't mesh with an organization doesn't mean you're bad or the organization's bad. It means this isn't your type of crazy or your type of bureaucracy. And I found that, one, usually I engage with the individual and find out why there doesn't seem to be a mesh. And if they're like, well, I took this job because I really needed a job in cyber and I'm really good at it, but my true love is this. And now if it's something our company does, I'll help them move over and you'll find a loyal and dedicated team member for many years to come. If we don't do it and their heart lies there, I'll call friends at other companies and see if the right employee and the right job can find each other. But I think a lot of people make it about emotion or ego. And that's where not only do you lose a good employee, you lose a good lifelong relationship in your own field. I don't work that way, and I hope less people do.
Yeah. Yeah, in the military, I did crisis management. Since then, I haven't done it. And I chose more of a analytical. I like going in and solving a problem, but not so much, okay, the world's coming to an end if your team of 100 people don't solve this problem. That's something, it's like, I feel that, okay, I'm just done with that. It's like you do that for a season in your life, but you can't handle that indefinitely. Have you ever, you feel that way or tired of, you know, how does a burnout affect you guys?
Absolutely. In every field, there's burnout, especially if you're on call or people. Many of my friends and senior executives are calling me. Again, a lot of times I get to call them on a good day. Other times they're calling me on what could be the setup for their worst day. There is burnout on some of it, but there's a great satisfaction of putting out a fire and helping somebody and then going and doing it again. However, the core thing of my career is I'm an analyst. I was the whole reason I was able to set up these programs or run the identity management for all of watchlisting or be Microsoft's first chief of cybercrime intelligence there at the DCU was because I love analyzing data and solving problems. Crises are problems, but analytics, data visualization is an absolute joy of mine. And so I get to apply it in crisis management, but I also in the more proactive sides of our job, helping clients make better decisions is a lot about the very analytics you and I both share.
Awesome. Great. So kind of as we pull to the end of here, anything you'd like to get out to our audience, help you, what you need, events coming up that you think are beneficial, or even how they can get a hold of you, use your services?
Oh, gotcha. I'm easily findable on LinkedIn under my name, Brian Hurd. I'm at the company called Aon, and our division, Straws Freeberg. And I have a lot of different speaking stuff coming up. It's all usually advertised up on the LinkedIn thing. So yeah, just visit there. And for those of you who are in roles as executives or in roles as cyber leaders, especially with everything that's changed, dust off your incident response plans. Make sure they're up to date. Make sure that you're taking a look because phishing attacks are hitting all of us now with all of the COVID stuff and our employees separated. And if you find yourself either, you know, having a bad day, need somebody to call, give a yell, or if you want to talk about how maybe to avoid one. But also programs like this, Chris, and I got to thank you, putting out information that doesn't cost people money, that gives them things to do. Honored to be a part of it, and I really appreciate the chance to talk to you and your audience. Stay safe out there.
All right. And thanks for that. We don't get that often. Sometimes we get a lot of no loop back feedback on what we do here. So thanks for bringing that back to us. All right. Thanks. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert, just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.